Hello, I'm Monsignor Jim Lasanti. Today on Personally Speaking, I'll be joined by Bishop James Conley from Lincoln, Nebraska. Bishop Conley announced recently to his diocese with great joy that he has returned from his medical leave of absence. Please stay with us. Welcome to Personally Speaking. I'm your host, Monsignor Jim Lasanti, and Bishop James Conley from the Diocese of Lincoln, Nebraska, joins me now. In December of 2019, Bishop Conley received permission from Pope Francis to take an 11-month medical leave of absence from his ministry. That month, Bishop Conley was diagnosed with depression and anxiety, along with chronic insomnia and debilitating tinnitus. In announcing his leave of absence, Bishop Conley said he was sharing his information about his health in hopes of helping to lift the stigma associated with mental health issues. Bishop Conley was ordained a priest for the Diocese of Wichita in 1985. He has served as Bishop of the Diocese of Lincoln since 2012. Bishop Conley has been auxiliary bishop in the Archdiocese of Denver since 2008 and had worked in the Vatican's Congregation for Bishops from 1996 to 2006. Bishop Conley says that he hopes his own sufferings will encourage others who struggle with mental illness and show that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Joining me now, I'm very pleased to welcome to Personally Speaking an old friend. We were pro-life directors together many years ago, Bishop James Conley of the Diocese of Lincoln, Nebraska. Welcome, Bishop Conley, on our show. And I'm going to start on a topic that I'm big into family of origin. You know that we are very much the people who planted good seed in us. So could you start by telling us, Bishop, Betty and Carl, what did they do right in raising you?
Well, my mother just passed away. I don't know if you knew that. On December 19th at 92.
Oh, God bless you.
So she tested positive for COVID, and then it was kind of related to that. But she had a long life. And a good life, but God rest her soul. I don't think I had mentioned that to you.
Yeah.
But they, my mom and dad, my dad died in 2006, raised me. Basically, we were kind of nominally Christian. We didn't really have a church that we went to on a regular basis, maybe on Christmas, maybe on Easter, but they raised us, myself and my sister, with very strong Christian values. And my father was a veteran of the Second World War, mm-hmm. came out of that great generation. And I guess if you say what was the philosophy of life that he instilled and inculcated into us was the fact that, that you can sort of rugged individualism. You can fix anything. If you work hard enough, you can do anything. You kind of pull yourself up by your bootstraps, mm-hmm. and a lot of self-reliance and self-determination, and you can do whatever you want to do. So I kind of was a product of that
right.
philosophy of life, you know, and it was good in a lot of ways, but then in a lot of ways, it wasn't so good because, we're not our own captains, and things right. happen. We're out of our control. And we can't fix everything.
Yeah. Okay. So they gave you some strength, but at the same time, not necessarily the idea that we are interdependent people and we need sometimes to reach out for help. Now, Bishop Conley, when you and I knew each other back in our 30s, I remember one of my bishops then developed some serious illness. And those of us who were part of his staff were strongly encouraged never to say anything in public about it. You know, that the bishop was sick, but no one was to know that. You've kind of turned that model upside down by being completely transparent about the challenges you faced. What went into your decision to say, I'm not going to hide this from my people. What I am by the grace of God. Let me share it with others.
Yeah, absolutely. It came on slowly, and I didn't realize that I was being kind of ground down, you might say. I wasn't sleeping, and this was back, if you trace it back to the beginning, I guess it started in August of 2018. And it really wasn't until March of 2019 that I finally went to a doctor. You know, I went to the Mayo Clinic to get checked out. I said, something's not right. I'm not sleeping. I'm worn out. And so up to that time, I just kind of soldiered forth, thinking I can get through this. You know, it's just work harder. You know, you're not work hard enough. And so when I went to the Mayo Clinic and they diagnosed me as, I had suffered from anxiety and depression. Mm-hmm. Also this tinnitus, which is this or tinnitus, you call it, what, two different ways of calling it, this ringing in my ear, and insomnia, which is, you know, not sleeping. And so that was in May of 2019. And I still didn't really tell anybody except for my closest, staff that I'm struggling with these things, but didn't really make it public. But it wasn't getting any better. And in fact, it was getting worse. And finally, I decided in that fall, would be fall of 2019, that I'm going to have to get some help. And I approached a couple of my very close bishop friends, Archbishop Coakley, who you probably remember, who's the Archbishop of Oklahoma City, is my longest best friend. We go back to seventh grade when we played on the same baseball team. So, and then Bishop Olmsted, who was my former bishop in Wichita, he's down in Phoenix now, and Bishop Jim Wall, who was key to the whole thing. And I told them, and they said, well, you know, you ought to maybe take some time off and really address this because you're not getting any better, and we see that you're getting worse. You know, and you know when your friends tell you that, you know that they're seeing something. And so, at the November U.S. Bishops meeting, I approached the Apostolic Nuncio. That was in 2019, and he was wonderful, Archbishop Pierre. And I told him the whole situation, and it's the first time I'd ever talked to him about this. And he said, well, you need some rest. You need to take some time off. And I said, well, how do I do that? I'm a bishop. And he said, well, just write me a letter. And then also the Metropolitan Archbishop Lucas, who is the Archbishop of Omaha, my neighbor to the east, he suggested that he could take over while I was gone as apostolic administrator. So I wrote up the letter. And when I got back from the meeting in Baltimore and it had to go to the Pope, and it came back and said, yeah, take some time off. Take how much ever time you have off. And I asked the nuncio, I said, should I just tell them why? And he said, yeah, sure, just tell them why. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I decided just why, you know, this day and age, you know, a bishop leaves and all kinds of things people will think. And so I decided just to be absolutely 100% honest, you know. Yeah. And so I went through the whole thing and told him this is what happened. And you know, and the response was remarkable. I mean, both my priests, but also the lay faithful, said, take as much time as you need, Bishop. Thank you for being so honest with us. Yeah. We'll be praying for you. And I got a lot of letters from people who said, you know, my son went through the same thing, or, you know, I've struggled with depression in my own life. You know, my husband has it. So, you know, it seems like almost every family has been touched by anxiety or depression. Then, you know, I take this medical leave of absence the 13th of December of last year, 2019. And then, you know, in February of 2020, the whole world takes a medical leave of absence when the COVID hits.
Right.
And that was strange. I mean, none of us saw that coming. And for me, it wasn't helpful because I was just kind of starting to kind of get a routine going, and all of a sudden everything locks down. You know, you got to be isolated. And isolation is one of the worst things, you know, for depression. You don't want to be isolated.
Right. And Bishop, let me ask you this. Do you think, and this is so hard to speculate, but are the burdens that caused you to be depressed, overwhelmed, if you had stayed in Wichita as a pastor of a nice parish, do you suspect you'd be suffering the same thing as you do in the unique role of a bishop?
Oh, that's a good question. I often think about, back in when things were simpler, being pastor of a parish, and there's different kinds of pressures, but not the kind of pressures that bishops have today, I think.
Yeah.
So who knows what would have happened? I don't know.
Right.
I do know that life was much simpler then.
Yes.
And the complexities, the tensions, the pressures of being a bishop today is a lot different than being a pastor of a parish.
You know, I was recently with a bishop who posed for 400 parishioners that get a picture with the bishop, and I said, "You're a very patient man to put up with it." And he said, "If you find people out there who are still supporting bishops and the church, you want to work with them. Your own people, you find, have been though wonderfully supportive, and that's a great thing." I listened to all your definitions of the things you were suffering from: depression, insomnia. And I realized, God, I've got some of those too, you know. But I realized mine is related to I'm responsible for my 100-year-old mother, and she wakes up about 3 times a night. So if she wakes up, I wake up, and I thought to myself,
wow. Good
if
for
I could
you.
Just get
good
her to
you.
Sleep, she's a part of that greatest generation too. But sleep is essential, and a lot of us
are
distracted, and we don't. Are you sleeping better now?
I am. I'm sleeping much, much better. And I underestimated the importance of sleep. I didn't think I needed sleep. You know, I was still thinking with a college kid's mind, you know, don't need much sleep, burn the candle at both ends, those kind of things. And it's absolutely essential.
You really need that. Bishop, there's a sign outside a hospital in New York that's always struck me. It says that depression is not a moral failure. It's a true illness. Do you find, as I still do, I'm afraid, that some people see it as some kind of human weakness or moral failing, don't realize it's as real as any other illness?
Right, right. No, I think that's true. There's a stigma that's still attached to it, and people don't look at depression as they would, let's say, diabetes or any other kind of physical illness that is so common. In fact, depression is probably as common as diabetes. It's everywhere. And even the corporate world doesn't understand it. I'm sure that if, you know, a businesswoman or a businessman, you know, says, "I want time off for dealing with depression," it might be kind of hard. They might lose their job.
Yeah.
Not considered, you know, it's not considered a real illness, but it is. It's a real illness like anything else.
There's a favorite movie of mine, probably yours too, is It's a Wonderful Life. And I love that at the beginning of the film, when Clarence is brought forth to St. Joseph and St. Peter, what's his problem? Is he sick, George Bailey? Worse than that, he's discouraged. How did you get back from discouragement? What are the steps? Is it therapy? Is it medicine? What's the road back, Bishop? Because you've taken that road. Can you share with us, is there a right way to get away from discouragement and into a spirit of hope again?
Yeah, well, it's all those you mentioned. When I was down in Phoenix, is where I spent most of the time. I had a good doctor and psychiatrist who, you know, there was medications involved, which helped. That wasn't the answer,
right?
But also, I had a good psychotherapist, a good Catholic psychotherapist, who was really, really helpful and encouraging, and helped me kind of think through things in a much healthier way. And then I had a spiritual director, great priest, a younger priest, you know, 20 years younger than I am. I was a little bit kind of wondering how this would go, but he was great. And so those three things really, really helped a lot. And then I have to say there was a family that they were students of mine when I was the chaplain at the University of Dallas in Rome, and they had since gotten married and have 5 kids. The oldest is went off to college this fall. I spent, especially during the lockdown, I spent, like, probably against the law, but I spent three nights a week over there eating with the family and just being with a real family, you know, and 5 kids. And it was just such a wonderful human thing. So it was a combination of all those things. It wasn't just one thing, but it was also not giving up. I think that's one of the temptations, just forging on. It was like, who is it that said, Winston Churchill said, if it feels like hell, keep going. you know, just keep going and just keep going. And that's what I did. And I think you end up getting through the tunnel and you can start to see the light at the end. And then even now, I mean, I'm not 100%, I'm close, but, you know, I'm not 100%, but I just keep that in mind. And lots of prayer. I mean, I had to, like I said, with the spiritual director, lots of prayer and hope and almost having to kind of re-examine my own spiritual life. Mm-hmm. But we're body and soul, you know, it's not a, there's not a spiritual answer to this.
Right,
it's,
right. You know, Bishop, in
spiritual, it's psychological, medical.
In my rectory, every twice a week in the basement, we have the AA people and the NA people. And they always say the same thing, that like, I only was able to get on the right road when I surrendered to my higher power. And I mention that because while you and I are professional religious in terms of talking to people about God, I don't find it any easier than most people to completely and totally trust and give it over to Him. When you're an administrator, as you are as a bishop, I would tend to think that it's so easy to believe that human beings can fix everything ultimately or find a solution. How and when did you come to a point where you said, I can't, but with you, all things are possible, Lord. Well, that whole struggle that we all go through to surrender, to do His will, and to trust Him with our lives, was there a particular time, or has it been a gradual thing where you were able to say, I'm there?
Well, it was a gradual thing. You know, it's one of those things we know, and we were taught probably in the seminary. We surrender our lives over to Jesus and to give Him, you know, complete control. But you know, you can say those words, but to actually live them and really, it was, and again, it goes back to my childhood. You know, my father was saying, you know, you can, you know, you feel like you know, part of it's your responsibility. And the Lord is saying, no, surrender everything. You know, I always loved that great prayer that's attributed to St. John the 23rd. It was during the Second Vatican Council, where he, at night, is supposed to have said, Lord, it's your church. I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
And that's, and I told people that I would counsel people to do that. And I wasn't taking the counsel myself. You know, I was taking things to home. I was taking things home. I was thinking, I was laying in bed thinking about things and not living that total surrender. So I guess it was during the time I was away that I realized somebody gave me a little novena, the surrender prayer. It's a beautiful prayer. And just really living that complete surrender to God, that we can do nothing without the strength and power of God, and to believe that and live that, it really is, it's kind of scary because you're kind of giving up something, but that's what the Lord wants you to do. And He supplies more than you could possibly come up with yourself.
Yeah. Bishop Jim Connolly is our guest. He's from Lincoln, Nebraska right now. Bishop, let me ask you, the other pressure every bishop faces in recent years is how to manage the scandal, the hurt, the pain that comes from priests who did not do what they should. Interestingly, in my parish, for many, many years, a regular visitor to our parish had been Cardinal McCarrick, because he's close to a family here. So I know that for that family and so many others who knew him, great heartbreak, great disappointment, great letdown. How, even though you and I know it's a, frankly, small minority of priests who have done the wrong thing, how do we help our people to come to trust again that the vast majority of priests are a good, faithful, love their kids and would never hurt a kid ever for any reason? Have you found a way back for us?
Well, that's a very important topic, because, you know, it was really kind of what led to kind of my, you know, taking a leave of absence, because the McCarrick story had just broke that summer. And then the Pennsylvania grand jury report came out. And then we had some local, and then our attorney general from our state asked all three dioceses for their files.
Wow.
So all that happened in about a space of about 6 weeks. And for me, it was being a convert to the Catholic faith, as you know.
Yeah.
I was disillusioned. I was saying, what is happening to our church?
Yeah.
And, it wasn't until I, you know, kind of put it more in perspective that, like you were saying, without minimizing the damage, the horror, the pain, the suffering that is has been caused by this relatively small number of priests, The church is still the church, and the church is still the church that I fell in love with when I decided to become a Catholic when I was in college. And, you know, even though it's been shaken, it's the same church, it's the same bride of Christ, and it's the same beautiful, good, and true church. It's just, that's the human side of it, you know, and it was, especially as a bishop, it was devastating, you know, to know what's happened and to talk to victims and to see the damage that was done. But you know what gives me hope, and I don't know if it's your experience, but these young priests that are going in, you know, they're getting a lot better formation than we got, you know, especially in the human area. And these guys are really, I think their motives have been purified, because they're entering the priesthood at a time when the priesthood is not held very high in society. So these guys are purely motivated by supernatural motives. You know, they're going, they're not going into it because they're going to be like a, you know, a doctor or a lawyer, you know, because oftentimes, you know, in the past, that's what that's where the priesthood was esteemed, how it was esteemed. But these guys are going into the priesthood during a time when the priesthood is kind of at a low.
Yeah.
But they're so filled with zeal and joy, and they see that the church needs good priests now more than ever. I remember when talking to some seminarians when I was in Rome, and it was right after the Boston scandal happened.
You know?
And these guys were from Boston, and there were four of them. And I was talking to them in front of St. Peter's, and I asked them, I said, gosh, it must be tough for you guys being seminarians in Boston these days. And one of them, just without hesitation, said, you know, he said, this is the best time to be a seminarian. The church needs good men now more than ever.
Right, right.
And I said, bravo. And that young man's a priest now, and I keep in contact with him. So, yeah, but it's tough, but it's there is hope. And there is a great encouragement with these young seminarians and priests.
Bishop Conley, because you mentioned it a few moments ago about the word coming back from the Holy Father, that you should take the time and take whatever time you need to get well again. I mention him because very often on this program, I don't have just Catholics. I have people of all faiths and some people who are agnostic. We had Ed Asner, the actor, on, and I said, you identify as an atheistic Jew. I said, but you're also 92. So I'm wondering, are you still an atheist? And he said, the older I get, the more I'm hoping you people are right, you know? And I think it's important to talk to people of all faiths. But I mention that because even those who have no faith are drawn to and are touched by what they see as a quality of the heart in Pope Francis. As a bishop serving in his time, your impression of our Holy Father?
Well, I think he's brought forth a lot of things, especially an understanding of humanity and the frailness of the human person. You know, his great love for the poor, obviously, but also one of the images that always sticks in my mind is there was a group of people with disability that were at an audience, you know, and he came up and kissed this one person who was obviously very, very much disabled, deformed. But he's, I think, brought a great appreciation for the human, the weakness of the human person, and how we must love that person in a special way. But I think that's something that he's really given to me.
Yeah, no, he has touched people in unique ways for just that reason. Bishop Jim Conley is our guest, as I mentioned, from Lincoln, Nebraska. Bishop, you mentioned earlier a quote from John the 23rd, and I believe that St. John the 23rd is the heart of my own priestly vocation, because I was growing up, he was the Pope. But his humanity was what ignited in me the notion of service to the Church. When you come forward and you share the struggle, when you come forward and you share the steps you took to get back to wholeness again, when you share with people openly and honestly the fact that a person puts on a collar doesn't mean they're not struggling just like everybody else, I think you are helping so many people by your transparency. It's such a gift, such a grace, that you're doing what you're doing, not only in grappling yourself, but then saying to the world, this is who I am, imperfect. God loves me just as I am, and I'm working to be better. I just think you free a lot of people out there who are listening to a program like this to say, we can't all do it alone. None of us can carry ourselves. We need the help of God. We need the help of the therapists and the good people out there who can solve it. I hope you know. I think you do know. You're a wonderful gift. You've always been a wonderful gift to the church. But in particular, this willingness to share brokenness and the road to healing is such a wonderful grace and goodness. And I just thank you for being on the show. And I thank you for your testimony. Because more than you know, I think you have touched so many hearts and minds and will continue to. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Monsignor. Appreciate that. And if I can help anybody, I want God to use me as an instrument of healing for anybody who goes through the same kind of suffering. Because I know a lot of people do. So, get help. That's all I can say. Is get help. Don't isolate yourself. Reach out.
Thank you, Bishop.
As we end today's program, I want to thank you all for being with us. If you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send them to me at our Personally Speaking podcast. Just write to personallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. To listen to our Personally Speaking podcast with some of our most recent shows, please go on YouTube and search under Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lusanti. And don't forget to click the like and subscribe buttons. Personally Speaking is also available as a podcast on Apple Podcasts, on iHeart, and on Spotify. You can also listen to past episodes by going on www.CloseEncounterTV.com. That's all one word, CloseEncounterTV.com, and clicking on the radio button at the top of the page. Additionally, Personally Speaking episodes are also available on my parish website, which is www.OLLMP.org. OLLMP.org, and you'll hear not only our past shows, but Monsignor Jim's weekly homilies. On the homepage, if you're able to financially help support the airing Personally Speaking and our radio ministry, that would be deeply appreciated. Personally Speaking is also on Facebook at Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lusanti. Please share and let others know about Personally Speaking. Also want to give a special word of thanks to those who have supported our program over the years, in particular the generous support of Peg and Pete D'Angelo. I'm privileged to serve as host and executive producer of Personally Speaking. Our producer is Lisa Jandovitz. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be with you next time on Personally Speaking.